Okay, thank you. So, welcome everybody back. I guess since here are quite a few people, you're probably the last ones in the building today. I've seen so many people leaving with suitcases. So, did you enjoy your ticket? Cool. I liked it too. And actually, it's pretty hard to get in-depth technical content to take it either Europe or US. US has been a little bit worse. Europe is quite okay, but it's always very hard. And in the past years, when I was staffing the booth, for example, sometimes people were coming by and there are so many domain admins or people interested in Active Directory technologies coming to TechEd. And when there are only like two sessions for Active Directory, then you have the product group coming here with a couple of marketing slides, and that's it. There's no more space. So I'm really glad that this year we were able to provide a lot of in-depth technical content. I actually liked the session I did with them together, the What's New in Active Directory. This can be done as a level 200 overview, which is marketing slide. But this time, he really went deep and brought a lot of slides from the product group, which I really enjoyed. So I'm going to talk about the evolution of Active Directory, which is hopefully valuable to you, because everybody needs to have some strategy how to recover Active Directory, how to prepare for recoveries in Active Directory. And since I'm talking about the evolution of those things, there are slides in here what you can use in Windows 2000, Windows 2003, and so on, up until Windows Server 2012. So we will cover a little bit of Windows Server 2012, and of course my test environment is running Windows Server 2012. However, we are talking about the evolution, what was going on, what were the issues, and so on. My name is Ulf Simon Wiedner. I'm working for Computer Center in Germany and started 98 working with Active Directory, actually. My boss forgot that I'm supposed to arrive on the 2nd of November in 98. And he was booked into a NT5 preview class and had some customer escalations. So he asked me if I want to go to his classroom training instead. And this NT5 preview was actually what turned out to be called Windows 2000 later. And the guy there told us how Microsoft is planning that customers are migrating from their existing NT4 environments into Active Directory. And I thought, this story doesn't sound round enough. So I actually was anxious to get my first hands on the bits, and I managed to get the CDs in during the Christmas holidays and spent most time of the holidays validating the migration strategy for Active Directory. It's a fascinating technology. Today, and let's switch machines here. At TechEd North America, this session was streamed online via internet, so I decided, okay, how do I want to take questions? Sometimes it's hard. We had a large room there, like 9 of these blocks here and just a few microphones laid out, so there are not always people getting out to the microphone, whatever. So I decided actually that it might be a good idea taking questions via Twitter. And if you feel more comfortable Twittering the questions, I will try to monitor them, during the session and we'll get to them on stage or afterwards. If we don't have enough time or whatever, we can always follow up afterwards. So I think that's a great benefit. But also, if you have any questions, I'm hard to interrupt, but you can try. Also, to set expectations, I'm German, so I have an accent. I try not to use it too heavily. And the other thing is, we are not funny. There was a TV commercial from Volkswagen one time where they had some professors, and they were doing like this here. And the TV commercial said, we can't dance, but we know how to build cars. And that's exactly what's fitting to us Germans. So the evolution of Active Directory is actually directly connected with the evolution of Windows. When we were looking back at Windows 2000, Microsoft thought that they had this great thing here, which is able to replace all NT4 infrastructures and which was scaling globally for large enterprises and so on. However, I've been working with large enterprises, and what we had to do back in the Windows 2000 days to make Active Directory working in their environments were a lot of manual steps in there that we had to configure, that replication is working correctly. Sometimes we had to configure static replication links. When we had failovers or failures of domain controllers, we had to reconfigure them. So there were a lot of settings what we had to do to make this operating system enterprise ready. And lots of customers were scared because of the group size limitations, about schemas replicating out to every domain controller and replicating the whole schema partition when there was a change in the schema partition instead of just replicating the changes. So when we were looking through the operating systems, things have been changed so that Windows actually got more and more enterprise ready. And when we look at the last versions, what we got here, we didn't actually get a lot of new, huge enterprise ready features. We got new features which are nice to have, like the recycle bin. I'm also a big fan of dynamic access to files now in Windows Server 2012. However, the underlying infrastructure hasn't changed much in the past releases because it's quite solid and it works well. So this session is a 300 level session. It's always kind of difficult to find those levels. 200 would be marketing, 400 would be very technical. So I actually have a couple 400 slides in there. Mostly it's 300 level, I assume. But we also have a little bit of 200 level for those who weren't in Active Directory Recovery for the past years. And here we are at 200 level right now. So domain, or when we have issues with domains or with Active Directory, it might be that we have issues with single domain controllers. It might be that we have issues with all domain controllers in a domain, which is requiring a domain recovery afterwards. Or it might be that we have a replicating issue in the schema partition, in the configuration partition, or anything else, which is affecting our whole forest. If we look at the not domain controller, not the service level, but if we look at the object level, we have different other scenarios. We have multi-object recovery, means that we have multiple objects which got deleted or which got changed. And then and those things are replicating out to all domain controllers. And this is where recovery is becoming very, very hard, because we have to figure out how to get the information back. And Active Directory is actually built to maintain a stable state so that all domain controllers have basically all the same information, which is replicating to all other domain controllers. So if we want to restore anything, those changes here, let's say we are deleting a couple users, those are replicating out, then they are also deleted. So we have to find ways how to undelete them. Also, we have object recovery of single objects or attribute recovery. Attribute recovery is quite easy too. Who in here is running at least Windows Server 2003? Probably everybody, right? Some people are still running Windows 2004 or something like that? Probably just too tired. So what's Windows Server 2003 and higher? You had the possibility of multi-object editing. So you're able to go into Active Directory users and computers, mark all objects. Actually, we can go do this real quick. I have a server up here, Hyper-V, server manager. Let's get rid of Twitter for a moment. We don't need it right now. So let's go here for the domain controllers. I just have one machine. It's a server core, actually. It's the new default installation, so I thought I'm going with it. And when I'm opening up here Active Directory users and computers, let's go to the my users thing here, and let's see, do we have an OU with multiple users? I think here we go. And if I mark all of them and right-click properties, I'm able now to change certain things here. So as the description, for example, or maybe they moved and I want to change the office number. But then I'm thinking, no, I don't want to change this. And I'm leaving the dialog, clicking OK right now. So since the checkbox is checked right next to Office, all those users will lose their Office number. And it's kind of hard getting those things back. There's a product out from Quest, AD Recovery Manager, which is able to do this, but not everybody has this product. And other people have also the necessity to get those things back. So what we can do starting with Windows 2000 and until we enable Recycle Bin is that we're performing a restore. The non-authoritative restore is simply getting a server back. Those things what we are doing in a domain or forest recovery, getting the first server back and running before we are able to replicate with other servers or get other servers up and running. So the non-authoritative restore only is giving us the server back. But afterwards, we need to perform an authoritative restore if we have data on the server, what we just recovered, which is not the same data than in the domain. So for example, if in the domain those users objects have a deletion flag on them, we need to do an authoritative restore that we are able to get those users back. So that means we mark the user and the groups or whatever we deleted as newer than the copy before, and when hit replication is hitting, those users on the other hand will be undeleted. The main issue with Active Directory restores, one question here. Burflex is something what you use in SysVol. So you can use, or you must use Burflex if you have an authoritative restore in SysVol. But if you have an authoritative, or if you want to restore Active Directory, you need to use another mechanism. Sam was talking about update sequence numbers earlier in the session today, this morning and yesterday morning, and I also have something on this. So the AD replication is working differently, and you still need to do something to mark the data as newer. And in Active Directory, you don't want, like we had a lot of users and groups and other OUs there. We don't want to become that all of them are getting to the previous state. We only want to have a selected amount of users or OUs replicating over and surviving. And so we need to select those users and groups and mark them as new. So the main issue is restoring links. Links is quite easy. We have forward links, we have backward links. Forward links are a group has a forward link and it's pointing to its users, which are member of the group. But if you know Active Directory users in computers, you also have a member of tab. And the member of tab is actually showing you the backward link, and that's something Active Directory is computing by itself. So the forward link is writable. The backward link is not writable because that's an internal thing in the database, and I'm showing you a little bit of the database structure in a moment. But we also have, so when we want to restore and we restore an object which has a backward link in there, so let's say we restore a user, his group membership is not restored because the group membership is the information from the group. If we restore a group, for example, and the user is not there yet because we are restoring users and groups at the same time, then the group is getting the information that the user is supposed to be there, but the group can't find the user at this point, and so the forward link is also vanishing away. And we also have links between groups and groups because we are able to nest groups, and we have links between users and users because sometimes some organizations are putting their managers, for example, or the managers hierarchy in Active Directory, what is actually a very good idea if you have Exchange and SharePoint server and so on running, because then you're able to navigate the organizational infrastructure using SharePoint, using Outlook Web Access, Outlook, whatever. You can see all the hierarchy information. So you always need to remember that only the forward links are writable. So if we look behind the scenes, let's look at the Active Directory database, and I hope you're able to see this. For TechEd North America, they were very generous giving me a design team going over my slides that they are looking more metro-ish. They did this for a couple of the sessions which were being streamed over, and they were pretty anxious to get it into this design here, what I found kind of maybe hard to read. But let's look in the Active Directory database. What is important to know is all data what we have on a single domain controller is actually maintained in the same table. So we have a data table, and no matter if a user is from domain A or if he's partially replicated over because he's in domain C and he's replicated because the domain controller is a global catalog server, all those data is in the same data table. So the whole partition thing you're hearing of Microsoft or what you read on the web, that's valid for replication, but if you look in the database, we only have one data table. We have some other tables. We have a security identifier table, link table, stuff like this, but the main data is in here. So we have the distinguished name tags and the parent distinguished name tags. Who in here heard about distinguished name tags before Sam's session yesterday? Okay, so a few. Distinguished name tags are basically Active Directory's database. And so we have a key which is counting forward, and you can't reuse those keys. It's just a key which is defining the row in Active Directory. And if you actually look at the distinguished names, CN equals Ulf, comma OU equals Munich, comma OU equals our domain, whatever, this distinguished name does not exist directly in the Active Directory database. It's actually made up by following the parent distinguished name tags up in the hierarchy. So here we see the deleted objects container is member in the company domain. The users container is right underneath the company domain object. The consulting group is underneath the users container in this example. Ulf, my user account, is underneath the users container, and also Cho, my misused user account, is also underneath the users container here. If we look at Cho now, Cho is also a member of a group, and we can see here, I hope you are able to see the arrows, the link table is specifying that Cho is a member, or in this case, that Ulf is a member of the consulting group, and here that Cho is also a member of the consulting group. So what's going on when we are deleting a user is he's being moved over into the deleted objects container instead of being in the OU where he was originally. Then his name is being mangled. They put a caret return del and the GUID of the user behind it so that we are able to reuse the same name when we want to create a new user. And all important attributes are being stripped away. So ever like the domain, the security identifier, and a couple of those attributes are staying in there, but all other information is going away. And the other thing which is going away is the information from the link table. And the users actually also see the is deleted flag here on the very right side. Here is deleted. This is being set to true, that we know that this user is being deleted. And the link table is vanished. We can't retrieve those informations back. In Windows Server 2008, the lifecycle was quite easily. In Windows Server 2008, we don't have a recycle bin feature. So if we have a live object, we are deleting it. It's being confirmed into a tombstone. And tombstone is the poor guy I just showed who didn't even have a first name anymore and where all important information was stripped away. We would be able to reanimate the tombstone. There are tools out on the internet, what you can use for free. One of them is AD Restore from SysInternals, or formerly SysInternals, now Microsoft. And there's also a free tool out from Quest, which is able to do undelete of a tombstone. However, then you get a user back who has the same SID, valuable, but he's lacking all other information, including group membership, including manager information, including his first name and all those things. After the tombstone lifetime, which is default 60 or 180 days, depending on the version of your first domain controller in the forest, after the tombstone lifetime is over, every domain controller locally is deleting this user. So the final deletion of the tombstone, the final deletion of the tombstone is nothing what is replicated. The domain controller knows there's a field when deleted, and the domain controller simply calculating is when deleted plus the tombstone lifetime smaller than now. And if that's the case, then he's being deleted. And this garbage collection process, which is taking care of this, is running by default every 12 hours on every domain controller individually. So you always have a little inconsistency in your deleted objects container for the objects which are being deleted in the past or in the next 12 hours. Or 6 hours, something like this. So when we enable Active Directory Recycle Bin, we are getting a different process here. So the live object is turning first into a deleted object, and the deleted object is maintaining all valuable information. And we will again have a look at the Active Directory database in a moment to see how this is looking. After the deleted object's lifetime is over, or we are able to undelete this user and we are able to recover all information what was in the user. After the deleted object's lifetime is over, this object is automatically transferred into a tombstone. This is then the same stripped object we had before, which is losing most information, and undeletion of a tombstone is not supported anymore as soon as we enable recycle bin. And we don't need it usually because we have enough time to delete the objects, getting all data back during the deleted object's lifetime. Tombstone lifetime and deleted object's lifetime are actually the same. Tombstone lifetime is the same as you configured it if you changed it, or it's 60 or 180 days based on the default of the first operating system. And the deleted object's lifetime, if you don't set a different value, it's just taking the same value than the tombstone lifetime. After the tombstone lifetime is over, we have the same process, garbage collection, every domain controller is taking care to get rid of those tombstones, and the information is out of the Active Directory. When we look now at the Active Directory recycle bin, and look close here, right next to the is deleted column, we are getting a is recycled column. This is new. And we also get a deactivated column in the link table. And probably everybody in here is now guessing what they are doing. So quite easily, when a user is being deleted, he's still moved into the deleted objects container. His name is changed. He's maintaining all attributes. The deleted flag is set to true. And the link is being marked as deactivated. So the link is still there, but it's marked as deactivated. So by default, Active Directory users and computers and all those other things will not see that this user was a member of the group. But if we want to undelete the user, it's now very easy because we just need to move him back into his container. We just need to fix up his name, which is easy, and we just need to remove the is deleted flag and the deactivated flag from the user and from the link, and then the user is being restored with all group memberships. So one thing here is that we require Windows Server 2008 R2 or higher forest level, because we must make sure that every domain controller who's deleting a user is maintaining all informations. And we can't ensure this if we don't have the forest level as opposed to domain level, because we also need to make sure that all servers of other domains are maintaining the links for the users who got deleted and that they are not removing it like in earlier versions of the operating system. If we restore multiple objects, there's an issue, and Sam was actually talking about this. When we delete users and groups and OUs and whatever, they are going into the deleted objects container, but the deleted objects container is completely flat. There's nothing, there's no hierarchy, nothing in there. So if we want to restore those OUs and those users, we need to make sure that we are restoring them by the hierarchy, because we can't restore a user if the domain where we want to restore him to, the OU, is not there yet. So to undelete them, we would actually need to go from top level to bottom level and restore everything in the order how the hierarchy was built. And there's an attribute in Active Directory which is helping us. We have a last known RDN, which is actually mentioning it's on the deleted object, and it's actually telling us where the user was in before. So the guys from the Active Directory product team have written a PowerShell commandlet which is actually using this information to recalculate the hierarchy, and you can actually use this tool to restore those users in the right order, and I have the link later in the presentation here. So we have different issues, we have different solution paths for the whole thing. We have a domain controller which is broken, all those domain controller broken, forest broken, domain broken, things haven't changed since Windows 2000 heavily. So there are few additions which are slightly helping, but they are basically the same. But if we fully delete objects with Windows Server 2008 R2, for example, we can use the recycle bin here. So that's the only scenario where the recycle bin is helping you. So for example, if you had a script which was removing the user first or removing attributes from the user first and then deleting it, you get the user back in the same state than it was when you hit the delete button. And okay. So we have a lot of other things where it's not helping, and we will look a little bit further into those things. But let me show you, or no, we do this later. The Active Directory Recycle Bin, as I said before, requires the forest level of Windows Server 2008 R2. New in Windows Server 2008 R2 is that we are able to redo forest or domain levels. So if you increase your forest level or domain level to 2008 R2, you're able to take it back to 2008 if you like to, unless you enabled a feature which is preventing this rollback. The product team has done this because there were so many customers which were scared about increasing the forest or domain level. And usually there are not lot of issues. When you get issues in your Active Directory, it's usually not with the schema update. It's more likely with domain update, but that's also very unlikely. But when you introduce the first domain controller, as Brian Poole said yesterday, or when you remove the last domain controller, those are things when behavior changes are coming in. So domain controllers of newer versions sometimes speak newer versions of the protocols. So for example, Kerberos is being updated, and there are a slight number of applications out there who have issues running against higher Kerberos versions or stuff like this. So there's an encryption tool which is coming from NetApp. With earlier software releases, they had issues that they weren't able to talk against the new Kerberos, and they required IPsec encryption from the client to the server, and then they were encrypting the files on the hard drives too, and this thing was unable to talk with earlier versions of, or with later versions of Kerberos. But it's pretty unlikely. There are a handful of applications out there which might cause issues. Mostly it's rather that in-house developers were writing something and they didn't write read the books carefully enough how to program. So sometimes there are issues. So if you're anxious because of a domain or forest level update, just in Windows Server 2008 R2, you can just go for it and you can decrease the forest or domain level down to Windows Server 2008. It's not possible to tear it down lower, but to 2008. And you can actually wait for a couple of weeks after you increase the forest or domain level just to ensure that everything is working before you enable the recycle bin. Enabling the recycle bin is then triggering this behavior change here, that the database is being extended, that all previously deleted objects are marked as tombstones or as recycled objects then, so you can't get those back. So make sure that you have a solid backup before you enable the recycle bin. And after you enable the recycle bin, you can't roll back to a lower level than Windows Server 2008 R2 because that's the minimal requirement for recycle bin. In Windows Server 2008, we have the Active Directory Administrative Center. And as we've shown in the session this morning, and I will also have a quick look into it, this now supports domain and forest level upgrade in the GUI. Before we had two different GUIs where we had to go or two different nodes where we had to go. It supports enabling the recycle bin right out of the graphical user interface, and it also supports undeleting of single objects in the graphical user interface. So let's go over to the session environment for a moment. And nope, we don't need Twitter here. Okay, let's stay here. So I was deleting this user before in the same session, so let's simply use him again. I'm simply deleting the OU Amsterdam here, which contains one user. This poor guy has been deleted so many times in the past couple of days, but if you want to enable the recycle bin and you're at the right forest and domain functional level, you can do it here. I was actually planning doing this in the session, and then me and Sam agreed yesterday that we are doing a small demo in his session, so I actually had to enable it before. But now we can see here Amsterdam and Show are in the deleted objects container. And if we want to undelete Show here, we have a restore and restore to option. If we want to do a restore, we have the problem here that the object parent is not there. Because Cho was a member of the Amsterdam OU, and we can actually use the recycle bin GUI here to show us where the parent of Cho is, and we see, okay, that's the Amsterdam OU. So if we restore this first and then we restore Cho, we are fine, and Cho is back to life here in the Amsterdam OU. And he's maintaining all information in there. Let's quickly look. I think he has not too many information, but a little bit here. He has an email address. He has a little. He has a web page, and so on. So all the information is restored. Group memberships are also restored, and so on. So that's fairly easy. Undeleting multiple objects. Either you go through them manually if you have a small number of objects, or you use the PowerShell script. However, Sam said also earlier that undeleting multiple objects is an issue what the product group wasn't able to solve for this release, because think of when you have an OU or you have your OU structure and you have certain, so deleting, undeleting, or deleting users is kind of a daily business when you have employees who are leaving the company. And so you delete them on a purpose. But after, or service accounts or whatever, you don't need them anymore, you delete them. And after a while, somebody is accidentally deleting the whole OU. If you use those scripts now to undelete the whole OU with all users underneath, you're also restoring the objects which were deleted on purpose. So what they actually, or one possibility to solve this is that you filter the results, what you're getting by the script, that you filter them by time, that you say, okay, everything which was deleted after this point in time, and then pipe this to the restore command. So you have to help yourself a little bit here. I hope that in a future version, we might be able to do versions on Active Directory operations that we are able to tell, okay, all those users and OU, they have been deleted at the same, using the same command or in the same transaction, and then it might be able to do things like that more easily. In Windows Server 2008 and higher, we have a feature called Active Directory Snapshots. And at our company, we are actually pretty innovative, and we just deployed the first server 2012 2 weeks ago in our production environment. And back when we were in the technology adoption program for Windows Server 2008, I said, hey, this Active Directory feature is such a cool feature, I want this to run in our enterprise. And we also moved to Windows Server 2008 before it got officially released in our production environment just to have those Active Directory snapshots. So what you can do here is you can create a snapshot of the Active Directory database. That's one point in view in time where you simply say, okay, I want to create a snapshot here. The database is in a consistent state at this point, and we are actually able to mount those files afterwards into the file system. So we have a version of the NTDSDIT where all information is in there, where it's completely solid, and we are able to mount this in the file system. Afterwards, we can run a tool. It's called it's dsamain.exe, and we are able to provide the database path here of the database out of the snapshot, and we are able to provide an LDAP port here. Actually, Active Directory always requires 4 LDAP ports to run. One is for domain services, one is for domain services via SSL, one is for global catalog, and one is for global catalog via SSL. So I actually had a little conversation with the developer when he was writing this DSA main tool, that he is allowing certain things and doing some rewording and some refunctioning. And one of those things were that I suggested that you only need to provide one LDAP port, and then he will use the next 3 LDAP ports automatically. Otherwise, the command line is very long. But you can also specify them manually if you feel like it or if you want to use different ports. Afterwards, you are able to access this read-only directory using any tool which is allowing you to specify a port number. So you can use Active Directory users and computers, DS query, etsy edit, whatever you like. And I actually want to show you this for a moment. So, no, we don't need Hyper-V Manager here. Let's go back into the Server Manager. And in Server Manager, it's pretty cool because you can remotely manage multiple servers. I just have one here, but you can, if you have multiple domain controllers, they would be all here in the one console. And the Server Manager is actually running on my host machine here, which is joined to the domain in the virtual environment. Yes, I know it's risky, but I did it. And I didn't feel like putting up a second server just for having management interfaces there, but I wanted everything to run on server core. So our domain controller is actually, if I can show you here, the remote desktop connection. Zack. So here's our domain controller, server core, nothing else. Let's actually exit here because I don't want to be in the PowerShell subcontext. There are people who are making this error. Let's get back to our desktop. So let's look at our usage, or actually let's do a snapshot first. So in Server Manager, we are also able to run those commands here, which I find very good. But on the other hand, what's happening when I'm running NTDSUtil here? Guess? open up NTDSUtil, gives me all the options what I can do. It's not running against the remote machine or something, and it's actually stopping because NTDSUtil is an interactive tool. So, okay, this doesn't provide me with a lot of value here, and that's one of the cases where I really need to connect against or RDP into Server Manager to run this utility here. So we go into NTDSUtil. That would be the Swiss version. NTDSUtil, then we say, we go in the snapshot subcontext, and we want to activate NTDS. So I'm now saying that he shouldn't run against ADLDS version or something, that we want to run against the domain version of this thing. And now we can simply say, okay, please create me a snapshot. It's creating a snapshot that's taking a short moment. It's making sure that the Active Directory database is at a consistent state. It's calling the volume shadow copy provider to make a file system snapshot. That's the same thing than your previous versions client, or the client side is the previous version client. So it's telling me now that the snapshot is finished. What I can do now is I can list the snapshots, list all. And now after I'm doing a list all, I can actually use those numbers up front here to mount a snapshot. If I don't do a list all, I have to specify this GUID or this GUID. If I have multiple Active Directory drives, I get here one global GUID for all the drives or all the volumes, and afterwards I'm getting one GUID per volume. So I can actually use this here if I like, and I can run, I'm going out of NTDSUtil, and now let's run DSA main, minus DB path. Actually, this was wrong, because I forgot to mount the snapshot. NTDSUtil, snapshot again. And now I don't need to activate anything because I just want to mount the snapshot. And since I just saved the GUID, I can use the GUID. So now let's start DSA main, minus DB path. And now we need to provide the path name where the Active Directory file is. So one of the changes is too that I insisted on spaces in between the parameter and the value so that you're able to do tab completion, which is very valuable. Is this today's date? It's 6:29. Okay, that's okay, because I created some other snapshot earlier. And now I need to go into Windows, NTDS, And I would actually recommend you do tab completion whenever you can, because it's the number you see here, it's actually date, month, day, minute, hour, minute, second. But it's easier just to tab complete it that you're not mistyping it. So when I'm actually we forgot the elder port here. Elder port 10,000. So now it's starting up Active Directory, and it's actually waiting here for me to stop it. We have to look here closely, because if we get an error, then we just return to the command line and it's telling us here what's going wrong, hopefully. So let's get back into Active Directory users and computers. Now let's open up users and computers. I'm still running against the server here, and I'm not running against the snapshot. Now let's go for show again. I'm kind of blind in those interfaces today. Here's my user. Amsterdam is here, I believe. Here's Joe. Go into his properties. And let's change something like he's now in building 33, for example. Apply. Okay. So the user, let's verify. The user building information has been changed. If I run now against the Active Directory snapshot, I can simply go for to run against a different domain controller, I can use the same domain controller here. So we use tech at DC01, and I specify the port number here, 10,000. We are waiting for a moment. Online, we hit OK. And now let's look at in the Amsterdam OU. Show properties, and here we can see the old building information. So I think this is very valuable because you can actually use Active Directory snapshots either to look at those snapshots at those versions before. You can use a simple command line to create schedules, those snapshots using schedule task. You can simply run ntdsutil, then snapshot, and we need to activate instance ntds, create, quit, and quit. And this is now running automatically, creating a snapshot, getting out of the utility. And you can actually run this in your task manager a couple times a day if you like to. And it's simply creating the snapshots whenever you specify they should be created. And it's usually okay if you create them on one domain controller per domain, because it's unlikely that you need the information, but in case you need it, it's there afterwards. Okay, let's go out of here and back to the presentation. So if we want now to reanimate tombstones because you don't have the recycle bin now, you can actually use those technologies as well. And one thing I wanted to mention about those AD snapshots, they are very valuable also if you want to restore something from backup, because you can simply extract the ntdsdit file from your backup, and then you run this DSA main tool against your backup, and you can actually look into the backup and see if that is the right Active Directory version you wanted to restore before you restore the full domain controller, and then just look into Active Directory and then figuring out, oopsie, I did the wrong version, I need to rerun this whole process. So if we want to use this stuff, reanimating tombstones, it's easy because we can reanimate the tombstone using AD Restore, AD Mod from Joe Richards, LDP, or any other tools which are doing it. And we get the user back who has all script information. So he has no first name, no last name. The security identifier is still there. Afterwards, we need to restore the rest of the information. And actually, the design company was so kind to having that gender as additional information here. So the kind of naked user without any information is being turned into a woman now. And we are also getting all the other information back. Probably they thought that Ulf is a woman name, whatever. What's still missing is the member of information or the group policy links and so on. And we can get those informations back by using LDFDE. We can use scripts. We can use OIRetch. There's a tool from an MVP out there which is actually doing this automatically, that you say, okay, here's the snapshot. Here's my domain. Please restore this user. Then he's restoring the user and getting all the additional information in there. And it's very valuable when you get into scripting. You can also use this process, or if you understand this process, you can also do this when you are just want to update a specific attribute or something. So we have a moment left, so I think I'm going back into the demo. And what did I want to do? Yes. Let's get the distinguished name of Joe first. DS query. Filter name equals show. Okay. Given name. Okay, so I got the DN of Joe here. Let's copy him. Let's open up a different interface because we need to have DSA main running again. I actually haven't done this demo in this kind. I didn't prepare it, so let's see if it's working. Let's break through the demo gods together. LDFDE. Now, help me with the parameters. I need to specify the server. No, I'm running on the current server. I have the parameters here. The port would be T, let's say 10,000. We want to run against the local host. That's okay. We want to have a specific distinguished name. That's Joe. We want to have a specific attribute. That's physical delivery office name. I should have chosen a different attribute, I guess. Can someone verify that I don't have typos in here? I want to run an export, which is default. I want to write it to a file, which we call output.ldf. Did I think of everything? We have the object, we have the attribute, we have the port number, and we have where we want to have the information. Okay. Do I have Notepad on Server Core? I don't know. Probably output.ldf. Sounds good. Okay, so now we have a LDF file here. And you can see I didn't demo before because usually I'm changing the fonts of my of Notepad to be pretty big for demos. Okay, so that's the output what we are getting here. And I have a slide about this a little bit later. So I'm just getting show, and it's actually suggesting that I want to do an add here. However, add is only creating new objects, so I would need to specify all kinds of attributes here. So let's do a modify instead. Modify. And now we want to modify the... Okay, I'm not going to type this again. Physical delivery office name, and we actually get the old information out here. Did you see? We have building 14, which was the old information with the room number. And now in LDAP, we also need to close the file with a minus if we do those write operations. Let's save it. And now please pray. LDAP DE. And now we want just to do an import of a file, and the file is called output for some reason. There's a syntax error. Okay. Change type is... The change type is replace. Okay, there's still some syntax error. Last token starts with an R. Let's see if I find it quickly. Otherwise, change type modify. And then we want to replace the attribute. It's so much easier when you try the demos before, but I just thought that this is usually so easy that I want to show you here. So. Took me like an extra minute to figure out right now because I didn't do a pre-canned demo. However, if I can find it out in a minute, you can also find it out in a minute in your environment. And now let's look at our... Let's get away here. Let's go back on our desktop, and I want to look into Active Directory users and computers again. This is running against the real directory. My user, Amsterdam, show, properties. Yep, information is back. And you can actually run this command against all your users, all the users in an OU. You can specify multiple attributes, whatever. So it's easy to get back. So let's get back to the demo. So virtual disease ready for today, and we actually had a couple of those discussions yesterday. Sam actually said that the Active Directory product group is still recommending one physical domain controller per domain. I actually don't care, and I'm not sure if that's the view of the whole product group, but it's up to them. I've seen multiple domain and forest recoveries because of virtualization. Because, for example, one time I was at a company, or they called me in. They were doing a fire drill there in the server room. They were exchanging the gas, which is being used to turn out the fire in case something is happening there. And the engineer who was down there was tripping some wires accidentally, or not sure what he did. But the emergency system was shutting all servers down. They were highly redundant. They had virtualization clusters in one data center, virtualization clusters in the other data center. They were replicated on a SAN, all those virtual machines. However, when they triggered the emergency shutdown, all those machines went so down so fast that the SAN wasn't able to write back all the information, so we had some SAN corruption there. The very good thing about replicated SANs is that they replicate, so we had the SAN corruption on the other hand, and we had to perform a forest recovery there. That's a real-world customer scenario. I'm sorry. So, if the product group is saying one physical domain controller per domain would be recommended, I actually don't agree, but I do agree that you don't put everything on the same SAN, that you need to avoid single points of failure. So if you have a replicating SAN where your virtualized infrastructure is based on, then get another one or have a virtual Hyper-V running there and have at least one domain controller per domain on a completely separate infrastructure and avoid any single point of failure what you have. If you do it and if you do virtualization correctly, don't use snapshots if you are not on Windows Server 2012 and don't have a supported hypervisor which is preventing you, but even then don't use snapshots, but then you can't destroy things. But don't use snapshots. And make sure that you have the time configured correctly. So one vendor is recommending that time should always be configured on the, or time synchronization from the host should be configured. Microsoft recommends this to be turned off and configuring the time service in Windows instead, which is also a good thing. I'm actually saying, I don't care, configure the host and Windows both to use the same NTP server, as long as they are on the same time. I don't care where they are getting it from. But if you make the mistake not to configure a time server on your virtual host, I wouldn't trust this time, and not even especially not for domain controllers. So just configure your virtualization host also to get time from the same time source, and then it doesn't matter. So what's happening here, USN rollback, you've seen the slides from Sam probably. I have it in here because this presentation was done separately from his. So when USN rollback means those servers here are always in sync. We have different update sequence numbers on different domain controllers. They are maintained locally, and every domain controller knows about every replication partner what's the latest version, what's the latest update sequence number he got from him. So the issue here is those two were running in time. We made a snapshot of one of the domain controllers here at his USN 2220. Now they are running some more time, create more users, use more USNs, and so on, do more changes. Now what's going on when we restore a snapshot? We are actually breaking the whole thing, and this USN bubble, what Sam was talking about earlier, is right this yellow box here. Because we have two domain controllers who have a different state here of time and a different state of information when they replicated the last time with each other. So domain controller one will now do a couple changes here, and domain controller two thinks, hey, I already received those changes, so he won't replicate them, and other way around too. So you have two different versions of your Active Directory running here, which is very hard to troubleshoot if you have to clean up afterwards. You have the same security identifiers, for example, for a couple objects. It's very likely to get those. So it's a very, very bad state. And that's the reason why you shouldn't use snapshots or other cloning technologies or, like Ghost, Acronis, whatever, on your domain controllers unless you do it right, unless you know what you're doing there. If you use Ghost, Acronis imaging things, you can actually set a registry key on the domain controller before he's coming back as a domain controller, that the domain controller assumes that he was restored from a backup, and then he's doing all those things what we do in virtualization safe domain controllers in Windows Server 2012. He's getting he's throwing his invocation ID away. That's the ID which is identifying him as a replication partner in the Active Directory domain at Forest. He's throwing this away and generating a new one. He's getting rid of his RID pool and stuff like this, and then he's assuming that he's new in the domain and he's just comparing all informations. So if you do it the right way, then you can go with those imaging technologies, but that's mostly for an emergency when you don't have any other ways of getting back. In Windows Server 2012, domain controllers can recognize when they are being rolled back because of the VMGen ID, what we heard in a couple sessions here. So I don't want to go too deep into it. It's simply a setting in the BIOS, and the machine is before every write of the domain controller, he's verifying if he's at the same state and if he hasn't been snapshotted or any worse thing done to him. But you have to have a host which is supporting VM generation identifier. We actually had a couple questions using Twitter earlier. I have to go there later. We had a couple questions here. VMGen IDs are supported on Hyper-V3, but also the information is out to other vendors how to do it, and we know that VMware is working on it. And I think they have already a version in their labs what you might get when you ask nicely if you want to try those features. And I know that other vendors also have the information how to do this. So it's not a secret, and I expect in the future that all virtualization vendors want to support those things, because otherwise virtualization of domain controllers with no possibility of turning snapshots off is a risky thing. Let's look at some best practices. So the first best practice is prevent human errors. Delegate whatever possible. At one company, I was called actually at 1 at night, and both phones, private mobile and company mobile, were kept ringing, and my wife got me up and told me, hey, there's something crazy going on. Both phones are ringing, and so I went there, and it was a company where thousands of objects got deleted, and groups, users, so basically all the information they needed to work, and they were working globally, and they needed to get certain countries back online on the same day. So we were actually doing a forest recovery, which took us hours to get just the permission fixed up afterwards. The reason why this happened was that they simply had too many domain administrators. They had a couple hundred domain administrators. After we were finished with the procedure, they had 3. And that's actually the way to go. You can delegate so many things, and it's not taking away rights from somebody, it's protecting somebody to do his daily job and not losing it. Important point here, I did this in a different talk, which was also running a tech at Europe across the years a couple times. Avoid built-in groups like account operators. Account operators have the right to create, delete, and modify users, groups, INETOG persons, and user computer accounts on every OU in your domain by default. So if you have somebody who's domain, who's account operator, because you didn't want to give him domain administrative rights, which is kind of the excuse group, he has the possibility to create a user account where the computer account belongs to be. He's able to create a computer account where the user account belongs to be. And if he's logging on with those credentials, he's able to get no group policies from you. You have an OU structure for a reason, so use it. If you want to create account operators, create your own group, call it somehow different, or likely that he's happy, and then simply delegate the rights to be got over users where users are supposed to be, got over groups where groups are supposed to be, so that he can't mess up your group policy and OU structure. Prevent accidental deletion. In Windows Server 2008 and R2, every OU which is created is automatically protected from accidental deletion if you use Windows Server 2008 and higher administration tools. If you use Windows Server 2003 Active Directory users and computers against the Windows Server 2008 domain, those OUs are not protected from accidental deletion. So if you're in a mixed environment, you might want to check this once in a while. If you're in a migrated environment, the OUs you created before you had Windows Server 2008 administrative tools are also not protected from accidental deletion. However, that's simply a security setting on every OU. You can do this if you're running Windows 2000 or higher in every version of Active Directory. You're able to put 2 deny aces there. Simply look up my blog. The URL is at the end of the slide deck here, and I have the information there what you need to set when you want to do this on other versions of the operating system. And if you need to delete OU, you can actually go into security settings, take those two aces away. It's everyone deny delete and everyone deny delete subtree setting, which is in the security tab. You can remove them out of there, and then you are able to undelete or to delete this OU. If you have 2008 or higher, or this is actually 2008 R2 with the PowerShell command, let's for Active Directory, then you're able to use this command to enable the protected from accidental deletion, another thing which is very long and you get typos in there. You can do the protect from accidental deletion for all OUs simply using this command here. It's a one-liner. This is PowerPoint, so it's a two-liner here, but in your command window, this should be a one-liner, and then it's simply getting all OUs and protect them from accidental deletion. You can also, and you should also do this for your domain controllers OU. For some reason, Microsoft was unable to fix this. Even in Windows Server 2012, your domain controller OU is not protected from accidental deletion, but they simply forgot to check in the right schema any file. Who remembers Windows Server 2003 R2 with the tombstone lifetime going from 180 days back to 60 days again? Same file. They also checked in the wrong version of the file. And now we got the very same thing again. We actually showed this to the product group in February, but they're still unable to fix it for some reason. So just protect all your OUs from accidental deletion. Here's actually the command how you couldn't do this in Windows 2000, 2003, and so on. And what you also would be able to do, change the default security descriptor of OUs, then every OU which is created, no matter with which command, is automatically protected from accidental deletion, because this would change the default. Backup. It's very important to backup the right data. You need the system state, for sure. If customers are calling me and they say, hey, I need to delete some group policies, but don't worry, I have a system state. I'm still worried. It's a hassle. So also update the GPOs using the scripts which are delivered with GPMC. Make a backup of your GPO links so that you know where they are. You can simply do this using an LDFDE script. And I have an example back here that you simply extract everything which has a GP link and GP option attribute in there, because those are the containers which have group policies in there, and then you even get the additional options of the group policy links in there. And also, I'm a fan of maintaining a list of objects, distinguished names, because when you need to perform a non-authoritative restore, you need to specify the distinguished name. Who in here knows the distinguished name of every user he might delete by heart? Oh, there's one guy. How many users do you have back there? Okay, so he has a couple of users, but he knows them by heart. Okay, I wouldn't know them. So I'm a fan of keeping the name of the distinguished names also in my backup. I backup those informations in a special folder, and the folder is including in the system state, then I'm safe. When I need to perform a restore, I'm able to copy and paste the distinguished name of the user out of there for the authoritative restore. I am able to use GPMC to restore group policies, and I have the additional information where those group policies were linked also in my scripts. Optionally, maintain versions of backups or keep AD snapshots or do both. And I have a lot of slides here which are giving you a lot of additional information, and I won't go through all of them. So system state backup is the data which is needed to restore a domain controller over a six existing OS. However, we've tested that you can also do critical volume backup, which is like 10-15%, which is here, 15% larger, and was on a regular domain controller which has not additional services, so just domain controller plus DNS as usual. And with a critical volume backup, you are actually able to enter a DVD or USB stick which with a copy of Windows on it, and then you are able to go into the repair mode, and then you can say, okay, I have a backup here, please use this one. And you don't need to reinstall the operating system first and then do a system state recovery. If you want to, Windows backup now needs to be installed. I prefer doing those things using group policy, and I will get to it in a moment. And then you need to perform scripts and ensure that it's installed. So you can actually use the command line here to ensure that the backup tool is installed. Here we have the list of objects, all distinguished names, all GPOs using the GPMC tools here, and the GPO links using LFDE as I promised. We have here the command to create a backup. We have the command to create an AD snapshot. We have a command here to, or a small script to maintain versions of the backup. So this customer here was requiring me to keep 10. It was one of the classical customers where the Windows, in a moment, where the Windows team and the backup team didn't get along very well. Who knows this? No? Okay. Pretty typical where I'm working. Maybe it's because of me. So this customer wanted me here to maintain 10 versions of every domain controller on his file server. Unfortunately, the file server was third-party SMB. So I wasn't able to use, if you use VBScript, for example, and you want to perform those commands, you need a WMI provider on the filer. And okay, the filer I was targeting had no WMI provider, and I didn't have much possibilities to script against this filer. So I thought about it, and I was actually failing back to good old DOS. Dir commands, copy commands, they work against UNC passes. So I was able to use those here. And this is simply querying all backups. They are sort by creation date, the folders. And I'm simply maintaining the latest 10 versions. So for every domain controller, that's the reason why the computer name is in here. You had a question? So the question is, what tool did I use to get all distinguished names of the users in the domain? DSQuery. It's very easy. It's in the operating system just there. You could use LFDE too, but I used DSQuery, and I just showed the command line very quickly. You can. The slide deck is on the network, so take it down. It's in there. So B?
There's nothing new in 2012 that's...
No, there's... You can actually use PowerShell too. So in 2012, you have a lot of Active Directory PowerShell commandlets, which are also enabling you doing those things. Actually, the command shell for this one would also be available in 2008 R2. Okay, one more. The slides must, they are supposed to be available since Monday or Tuesday, so they should be up there. If not, shoot me a message, I'll send them to you. Okay, let's get back. So we just had the, here's your, the top one is the DSQuery command here. Okay. So additional technologies, you can use snapshots as additions to enable versions. You can actually take the ntdsdit file and put it into QuestsAD Recovery Manager if you have it, and then you're able to roll back to the version of the snapshot. And we prefer, at our company, we prefer to manage snapshots and the customers where we are working, because snapshots are automatically, I think, reserving 12% of your hard drive, something like this. And when you create volume shadow copies or AD snapshots and you have too much information there, then everything which is beyond 12% will be automatically deleted when you do the next one. But in our recovery strategy, we want to say that we maintain, for example, the full snapshot for 7 days, and after 7 days, only the ntdsdit file is interesting for us. So we actually have scripts which are copying the ntdsdit file out of the snapshot and maintaining this on a file server. And after 30 days, we are actually also getting rid of the ntdsdit file. And we've been running this with this configuration since Windows Server 2008, and it's working very well. So if you are aware of AD snapshots, and you've seen my improved demo earlier where I was able to figure out how the thing is doing in 1 minute, if you're used to those scripting technologies, if you know the possibilities, what you have with Active Directory snapshots and all the other things, with the DSA main tool running against the backup, for example, too, you have solutions for all those yellow and orange appearing scenarios as well, because then you don't even you don't necessarily rely to the only scenario where Active Directory Recycle Bin is helping you, but you also have solution for everything else. You are actually able to mount a Windows Server 2003 Active Directory from a Windows Server 2008 box. You can't create a snapshot there, but if you create a backup of the NTDSDIT file, then you are able to mount this in Windows Server 2008 by providing two additional parameters in the DSA main command. So you could use actually a Windows Server 2008 domain controller standalone somewhere just to mount a snapshot from 2003 or something. If you need to get information back there, pull the LDAP files with the old information from there, go over, pump it back in your live directory. And I hope that's the slide here. No, those are the scripts for Recycle Bin. Here's the script, what I mentioned before, from the Active Directory product group for the tree undelete. And yeah, if we want to restore object data, before I did an example which was very easy because I simply took one attribute. However, if I want to recreate a full user using Tombstone, I can use this approach. I'm using an LDAPVE command again to get all users or the users I want to undelete. After I reanimated their tombstones, I'm just using this LDAPVE command here to get all information and all attributes of the user. Now I have an issue because there are certain attributes which are not writable because they are owned by the system when changed, update sequence number, and so on. And I have another issue is that the file is in the wrong format because it has the change type apt, and change type add means that they want to push the whole information until the minus thing here into the directory at once. But if I have any attributes in there which are not writable, then I can't put the whole thing in there. And add actually means adding a new user, but I also already have the user because I restored the tombstone. So I'm simply converting those into, I have a simple script which is doing this, and you can actually ping me on my blog and I send you the URL. I'm simply doing a conversion so that I'm modifying every single attribute which is coming from the LDAP file. And then when I use the parameters which are up there, the minus C means, or Z for the Germans, the minus C here means that we continue if we fail. So I can actually write back every attribute where I have write rights as domain administrator. And everything where I don't have write rights as domain administrator, I don't care usually, because those are system-owned, and I really don't care. The important information is getting back. One thing what we still have here, so those are specific examples for the LDAPVE commands here. One issue I still have is remembering slide 3 or something, restoring links, because we always are able to write forward links and not backward links. But you are actually able, either you can expand the LDAPVE conversion to recognize links and then change them around that you write into the group instead of the user, one possibility. And NTDSUtil is giving you those files using authoritative restores if you have Windows Server 2003 SP1 or higher. Or you can use this one command line here. Again, this is PowerPoint. Command line would be one thing. We are simply saying, okay, I use dsget to get from the user ulf here the running against the snapshot, that's actually the global directory port of the snapshot to restore universal group memberships as well. I'm getting the member of list. I'm piping this over here. So I'm modifying a group which is piped from here and add the member ulf. And that's a one-liner which is restoring all group memberships to the previous state. It's reading from the snapshot and writing into the live directory. Pretty easy. And when you get used to those things, then you don't worry about lots of failures in AD anymore, because if somebody is making some mistakes, you have so many solutions there how to solve those things. Ways to get data. You can use the Recycle Bin. You can use snapshots in Windows Server 2000 and 2003. You need to create backups. You need to create backups anyways, because if you have a domain or a forest failure, you need to restore from backup in any case. However, it's usually sufficient if you have like 2-3 backups per domain. Backupped domain controllers per domain. Ensure once in a while that your backups are working. If they are not working, you have also issues, and you are feeling well mostly because you haven't recognized yet. I said before that the older disks can also be mounted with DSA main when you specify the allow upgrade parameter, and you need to have a writable directory for those. And let's skip over this here real quickly. Those are mostly covered. What I noch want to mention at the end here is if you want to deploy your backup strategy, I actually encourage you to look into group policy preferences. You can create folders there. You can create files. You can copy files. You can create scheduled tasks. So everything what you need to do, the things we're talking today, you can actually do doing a group policy. So what I prefer to do is I create one group. It's called DCs, which are backed up, for example. Then I configure group policy preferences that it's creating a backup folder, that it's creating an script folder. I'm copying my backup scripts into the script folder. I configure a scheduled task that this script is being run every evening, for example, at a specified time. And if I put any domain controller in this group and I apply the group policy or I configure the group policy that it's only being applied to the domain controllers in this group. And if I have a new domain controller and I want it to be backed up, I'm simply putting it into the group. I'm doing the same thing for AD snapshots. I'm doing the same thing for all domain controllers, because in Windows Server 2008 SP1 or higher, you are able to synchronize the directory services restore mode administrator password from a user account in the domain. So I'm usually using a group policy preference, which is synchronizing a disabled user account's password into my DSM directory services restore mode admin. It's a one-liner. It's a group policy what I put on the default domain controllers OU, and I just have to instruct the administrators that they are changing the password of this disabled user once in a while so that the directory services restore mode passwords are also changing. We have some additional commands here. Here's also the synchronization thing, so lots of additional information to read afterwards. Here in Windows Server 2008 and higher, we have auditing of object changes. So you can enable this one, then it's telling you, okay, this attribute had this value before and this value after if something is changing. This is also helping you have change procedures in place when you change users or whatever, because if you do domain recoveries or any other recoveries, you need to get back the users into the groups they were before, and sometimes you were putting them into groups after you did the last snapshot or after you did the last backup. So if you have change policies, this is documented and makes it easier to rerun those things. Extending the management interfaces, you are able to extend Active Directory Administrative Center slightly. Before, you were able to extend the context menu. This is only work in Active Directory users and computers. In Active Directory Administrative Center, you are able to extend the list of tools. And you are also, if you have C++ writing skills, you are also able to extend user or group objects to provide additional tabs in the active for the user properties. And this will also, those extended tabs will also show up in the Active Directory Administrative Center as well as in ADAC. DCs for we've heard this a couple of times that DCs are clonable now. If they wouldn't, they would be clonableness, as Dean stated once. And you can actually use this in your recovery strategy for forest or domain recovery to scale out pretty quickly too. Okay, I'm skipping the customer scenario here. We are out of time, but it's just additional information there. Here I was putting a list together. Was features, what features you are getting in which version of the operating system which are required for Active Directory restore, and that's it so far. We don't have any related sessions left, as you can assume. They were requiring me to put the slide in here. I think the hands-on labs are closed by now too, unfortunately. There will be certification exams. The first one was available this week. The other ones will be available later. Those are the exams for Windows Server 2012. And We don't have time for Q&A. I think the conference is closing, but I'm available via my web blog. There's the contact button there. I will review the questions which got to me via Twitter and will answer them via Twitter too. And I would really like to encourage you filling an evaluation. So for your benefit, You can use QR codes or Microsoft Tag here. This is actually leading you right, if you want to use your phone, this is leading you right to the evaluation page. I really try hard every year to get high technical content back to TechEd, and I would love to be here back. So if you like the question, please fill in the evaluation. And thank you for your attendance, and safe travels home.